Scott Parkinson at the Club for Growth. He is intimately involved in a certain U.S. Senate race in Virginia this year, but we also have U.S. Senate races all around the country, as well as key congressional races. Congress now in recess, so we're going to take a few minutes today to take stock of where everything stands. Scott, good to have you here.
Great to be back, Loman. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's talk first about Congress here. Congress has adjourned for a while. We're soon going to be headed into the summer season where even less gets done. Should we expect much more out of this Congress?
We're at the point, I think, in 2024, everybody's got their eye on the prize for this big election. And I remember many, many years ago when the Democrats held power with Harry Reid, and he used to put forward some of the hardest votes in the United States Senate against Republican candidates that were up for re-election, and it would be a real political vulnerability for them. And obviously, in the way that the uniparty operates in Washington, D.C. now, we don't really see Republicans pushing the Democrats to the brink. But we did recently have some big, big immigration votes that were held on the Lake and Riley Act. Senator Budd from North Carolina had a big vote, got all the Democrats on the record. We got Democrats on the record saying that they support flying in illegal aliens from South America and elsewhere, right directly into the United States of America. And so there were a few Republican senators that I would say went rogue in exchange for passing that terrible appropriations bill just over a week ago. And the fundamental point here that I think all the listeners need to consider is that we do have some political ammunition. And the question is, how are we going to use it against senators like Tim Kaine? How are we going to use it against John Tester and Sherrod Brown? And how are we going to win back the Senate majority? There's many, many competitive races in addition to the states that I mentioned there. We've got Arizona and Nevada and Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. I think that we're in shape right now for a very, very good electoral outcome. And of course, when you look at the presidential race, there's a lot of independent voices out there that are completely dissatisfied with the president, President Biden's job approval, his performance, and they're ready to vote to make a change. I think that means that we get a Republican Senate majority, and I think that that means that Donald Trump is going to get reelected in 2024.
Some of these U.S. Senate races are somewhat predictable. I think Republicans have very high hopes, of course, in West Virginia, where Joe Manchin is not running for re-election. That, of course, a huge state for Donald Trump. In the last couple of weeks, there's been some polling, Scott, where the state of Maryland, which is usually reliably Democrat, appears to be in play when it comes to the U.S. Senate race. What are you seeing there?
Well, Larry Hogan is the former governor of Maryland, and I think that the party insiders that are getting all excited about this, to me, it's another one of these moderate, bipartisan-type governors that his record is what it is. Would he be a Republican vote in terms of adding to the majority? Of course. But how will he actually vote when he gets in there? I think that we need Republican candidates that are going to fight back against the status quo. And to me, that means we're going to fight back against the overspending. That means we're going to fight for free markets. That means that we're going to fight for our constitutional rights. And that means that we're going to fight this illegal alien invasion that we've got on the southern border. And all these candidates that are out there, I think the voters need to ask them very directly, where do they stand on those important issues? What other issues matter to them? What are we going to do about election integrity? What are we going to do about school choice? What are we going to do about the cost of living in America? And I think that those questions will be answered differently depending on which state some of these folks live in. Obviously, Maryland has a Democrat governor. They've got two Democrat senators right now, Ben Cardin retiring. That one is going to be a competitive race. Larry Hogan is going to be the Republican nominee. And I guess the question is, what type of senator would he be if he's elected?
You, of course, have been out among the grassroots very heavily in the Commonwealth of Virginia, the Old Dominion here over the last number of months here, Scott. What are you hearing as you talk to regular people, not the pollsters, not the Washington insiders, but you're out there, you're talking with actual voters who live their everyday lives. What are their main concerns? Is immigration actually at the top of the list these days?
I think that it is. We've seen all across communities the rapes, the murders. There was another murder in Michigan this week. This is hitting all communities and all people. And so I think the fentanyl crisis is also borne by the illegal immigration crisis. And there's just a lot of people that are sick and tired of not feeling safe in their communities. And I think that in addition to all that, there's a big, big question about jobs and the economy and sort of how these smaller communities are almost dying off. And, you know, my hometown was a hometown of about 11,000 people. And large amount of the people that are employed in that small town are supported by one or two job providers. And ultimately, when you see some of these corporate interests or large small businesses move to a more competitive landscape to be closer to more consumers or just to have better benefits for their employees, they're moving toward larger cities and the suburbs. And so I think that's why you're seeing sort of this explosion in terms of economic activity in places like Northern Virginia. But what does that mean for rural Virginia? What does that mean for rural America? What does it mean for Main Street businesses? And that's definitely on the minds of a lot of these grassroots voters that I speak to every single day.
On the other side of the Capitol Rotunda, of course, Republicans down to, what, about a one-seat majority in the U.S. Congress. Just very briefly and at a high-level overview, where do you see the competitive races for congressional seats headed at this early stage in the 2024 race?
We know that through redistricting, it's almost a wash in terms of the seats that we're going to pick up in North Carolina compared to the seats that we're going to lose in New York. We know that we lost a congressional district in Alabama due to a court case there. And then when you think about how the lines were redrawn just a couple of years ago, there aren't as many competitive races. I think that the National Republican Congressional Committee, the NRCC, has roughly 30 races that they're sort of targeting here. And some of them are stretch races if we have a really good night. Others are very, very competitive on a bad night. And the majority that we have right now, a one-seat majority following Ken Buck's retirement and Mike Gallagher's announcement, that is very much not going to be growing to a 40-seat majority like we've had in the past with these big wave elections. I think that House Republicans at best will have a 10 to 15-seat majority, and that would really take a strong electoral challenge from President Trump to really put a lot of these states in play.
Scott Parkinson at the Club for Growth. We always like to end our little talks here, Scott, by having you tell us a little bit about the Club.
Club for Growth is a membership organization based out of Washington, D.C. You can check us out at clubforgrowth.org and sign up to become a member for free.
Scott Parkinson at the Club for Growth. Scott, thank you. Talk to you next week.
Okay, thank you.